But our agenda tonight, so really posting for if there are any public comments around the curriculum materials for child abuse that we talked about last time for pre-K. We've been going around and soliciting some more feedback. All feedback we've received has been positive. Liking to stay in the same program for pre-K 4, liking the counselor conversation for pre-K 3. And so we'll do, you'll see a little bit more public information go out about that. I'll talk to the board in February, and then looking at probably the board doing an approval possibly in March. And, so we'll send out some more. Last SHAC meeting, that took up most of our last SHAC meeting. And then Caitlin Puckett talked about pregnancy-related services. She was going to answer additional questions that you had today, except she is sick. She woke up pretty sick. And she's still, you know, she's tracking all of our pregnant students. And we do, there was a question that came through from someone who said, you know, do we ask for medical, basically a doctor note confirming pregnancy? And we do. We just don't push for that like right away when we could have filmed this pregnant. But we do work with the nurse and work with Caitlin, and we work to get medical confirmation of pregnancy. And there have been some cases where we have thought they've been pregnant, but they have not. There's been some attention seeking by using pretending we are, and then we've worked with Ms. Deloach and some other people in regards to helping that student see if they're just emotionally okay. And things are good. But we've been around five students this year. Five students are pregnant, the majority of them are older. And then, like she said before, we partner with Head Start, and we partner with the Pregnancy and Life Center. And we partnered with the Honolulu's Crisis Network because they also have items. Pregnancy and Life Center has the most items. The more videos and education and classes they participate in, they earn the bucks to be able to purchase stuff at the Pregnancy and Life Center. So she'll be here next time to answer additional questions you might have. We do send a teacher out for 6 weeks, as we said before, or if the doctor determines the student has to be on bed rest before the baby is born, we send the teacher out before then. If they have to be received homebound services. So a teacher goes out there a minimum of 4 hours a week to serve the student. A lot of times the student's working on other things. As a side note, I don't know if I told all this before, but when I was a high school teacher in my previous system, that was one of my favorite things I did. It was before I had kids. And so I served a lot of the pregnant students. I would go a lot to their homes for 4 hours a week. Sometimes you're holding the baby while the 16-year-old is trying to take a test. You know, but you're at least you're getting them through school. You're making sure that they're going to get that high school diploma, and you're helping them. You're checking up on them, too. You're kind of looking at the house, and you're just making sure that they're being taken care of and their needs are being met. We don't have anybody here for public comments, and so I kind of gave you an update. We're still going around and talking to some different groups of people around the pre-K materials, and everything's been positive. We'll post for public comment again, we will have some public information in February board. Last time we had too full of an agenda, so we had employee wellness on last time, and we didn't get to it, and so we're going to give you an overview of employee wellness for this year. One of the things that you approved last year that Dr. Gassaway really wanted your input on, remember, was with Right Way Imaging coming in. Right Way Imaging coming in and people being able to sign up for Right Way Imaging. And if that's how they would find out that there was something that, you know, even though there's other ways and we believe they really should see a doctor in that. With the Right Way Imaging, not to just revealed my husband's medical history or anything, but since I'm recorded, but I guess I am. Actually, my husband was one of the ones that Right Way Imaging picked up some things on. And so his blood pressure, I guess, was running at a regular rate of like 198 over 100 and something other. It was running really, really high. And to where they suggested seeing the doctor immediately. I've heard from a couple other employees, like, hey, didn't know this happened, this showed up on Right Way Imaging. So in the end, would Tony have just gone? No, he probably wouldn't have just gone to the doctor. He some stuff to help with high blood pressure that should have been in place that we didn't even know about. So we have several other things with employee wellness besides just Right Way Imaging. The employee assistance program, so this is open to any employee, and it's counseling, and they can call this number, and we encourage and we really try to get this out, this information out. We have flyers everywhere. If we know that we have a situation where there's been the death of a student, the death of a student's family member, the death of an employee's family member, anything like that, we really try to share the employee assistance program information. It remains confidential. Employees can call in for counseling. If you see here, it says stress, anxiety, depression, relationship, family, parenting issues, substance abuse, anger, grief, loss, life transitions, referrals for additional treatment. They help to refer you for additional treatment. And then they also can help basically link you up to other resources that a social worker would help link you up to. And so it's this is, Dr. Gasway really values feedback that employees give around their employee assistance program. There were a couple pieces of negative feedback that came in last year, and he met with the company, and we have not received that same negative feedback this year. We've come off positive feedback, because this is critical. If employees call and they don't feel valued, or they're put off, or it's really hard for them to get in touch with somebody, they're less likely to call, and they're going to tell everybody else, don't call this number. And we want people to be able to reach out for help. And so I have heard personally from several people who have called that they have found it beneficial and helpful, particularly, and then referred for long-term counseling. And it covers the employee and family members of the employee. In fact, I had numerous people, I think I had talked to you about this, how my father passed away in October. Did I tell you about that last time? I don't remember if I did, but my father passed away in October, and so it was wonderful to see, though, that numerous employees reminded me of the employee assistance program for if I needed to call. And so that was good to hear, because that's what we want people doing. We want people telling each other about the employee assistance program. So, Elizabeth Almazan is our benefits person, and she also handles employee wellness. And so she sends out all kinds of things to us. She sends out Wellness Wednesday emails with all kinds of little things. This email was about high intensity interval training, and there was a video on 5 minutes, how to do this for 5 minutes. And so I have a couple of just different clips here. She also shares out, she has an email, and then there's also a newsletter. She shares out a newsletter. We partner with Risk Management on some of our employee wellness also. So how to hit exercise goals. What we send out, then examples of exercises, tips for you. You can join a wellness challenge. There's a challenge question. You get put in like a raffle to be pulled for a prize. And then you can also join a wellness challenge where you get a certain, like today we actually got cups if we all met the latest wellness challenge. The newsletters and the tips are in English and Spanish. So everything is shared, both. It's shared with all employees. All employees have emails, but all employees may not ever access their email. They may not have a computer at home. And so many of those other directors, they post this within their areas so that all the employees see. Here's the newsletter. You know, I just showed you the top of it earlier. This is the newsletter in its full form. There's a QR code for the question, and then you can see it's in English and Spanish. So employee newsletter. Pretty much anything medical, health, wellness, employee-wise, Elizabeth is your person that takes care of you. She sent out these things this year that are called safety shorts. And they're little short, like, we're not going to watch the whole 5-minute video because I have a couple other videos I really wanted you to see to take up some of our time. But she sent out little safety shorts about different topics. And it's a 5-minute video, trying to get people to watch it. We're trying to spread the word about it. I want to show, for instance, I told you they're on safety, so let me show you this one. This was one, I'm not watching the whole video, I think it will come on.
Hi, this is Neil Gately, bringing you another Edward Risk Management Safety Short. Today we're talking about the basics of fire detection and protection system. What you need to know about fire alarms, sprinkler systems, and extinguishing equipment in your workplace. Most workplaces have a variety of common and special hazards that involve fire, be it hazards from electrical and mechanical equipment, cooking and laundry operations, storage and use of flammable liquids, or arson. The list goes on and on. But I work in a building made of concrete and steel, you might say. Well, what possibly could burn in here? Well, we're glad you asked. If you have the ability from a to support a fire with enough intensity to destroy an office, desk, cabinets, office supplies, paperweights, draperies, decorations, maintenance shop supplies, cardboard boxes, and Christmas decorations stored in the furnace room or attic, are just a few examples of workplace contents that can help a small fire to become ablaze. Automatic fire sprinkler systems provide the most reliable form of fire protection. They not only protect property, but more importantly, they save lives. Fire deaths in properly sprinkled buildings are extreme.
I have watched the whole video, so it talks about, he defines all the different types of fire prevention equipment, and then how to use some of the fire, like how to use a fire extinguisher, how to, this one he doesn't have the most exciting voice, but he has it's 5 minutes about fire smart for your workplace. They are not just for schools, so that's why it's talking about businesses and other things. The one in the email from the presentation that I was showing you is actually on security in the workplace. I mean, you know, we are very fortunate as a school district. We have security. We have security at all of our schools, but not every workplace has security. So this one was a 5-minute video on security in the workplace. Send these out about once a month. Also, so little short videos on safety in the workplace. Our maintenance department watches all of the videos. Child nutrition watches all of the videos. There are certain groups, our nurses watch all the videos. I hear about it at the nurse meetings. We don't require a captive audience for the nurses to watch it, but maintenance requires all their staff, and then everyone else is able to watch it also. She also coordinates vaccine clinics for our staff. So throughout COVID, Elizabeth and I, we coordinated vaccine clinics throughout COVID. We had staff who could not get vaccines if they chose to get vaccines. And so our, you know, this isn't forcing people to get vaccines, but it is like, hey, we're partnering with HEB, and we're partnering with HEB, and then there's this vaccine clinic. You're able to sign up with the HEB, take your prescription card, and we can provide it. We also have where she's able to coordinate where it's been done on campuses. There's been some times where we've had it done at central office. And then there's been times where it's like, hey, this is where you can go, that they take our stuff and you're able to go get your vaccine. When we were in the middle of COVID, when Elizabeth and I, we were working through people who wanted to get a COVID vaccine or not get a COVID vaccine, like people who wanted, you know, we would emphasize on the emails that we were just, it's there for if people would like to. We were able to get all the employees in who wanted to have one. So she still coordinates flu vaccines and other vaccines if they're other vaccines if that comes up. I have a feeling they probably are a lot more gentle than like what Ms. Martin does. You can see here, you know, HEB will be on your campus Tuesday, October 17th. Please view the flyer, scan the QR code, and then you go ahead and make an appointment if you wish to have a vaccine. We alternate between, I just lost the name of the other pharmacy.
Atkins.
Thank you. We alternate between Atkins and between HEB. And so we alternate between the two. The next, any questions over employee wellness?
I do.
Yes.
Can you refer somebody to the employee assistance program? Like if you're a coworker and you notice, you think your coworker's not doing well, can you call and say, hey, can y'all reach out to them?
Not in that necessary way, but yes, you can refer someone to them. I need to look into that question just a little bit more because I don't think, but I think you can like go to Elizabeth and she keeps confidentiality and then she reaches out to them.
student's teacher.
Yes.
And you're worried about
yeah.
them, you know, just to be
I'm
able to, and where it's not their supervisor, like you're not ratting them out work-wise.
Correct.
Yeah.
You're just worried about them.
Right.
Let me find that information out. That's an excellent question. Other questions on employee wellness? The fitness cream. Do you want to talk a little bit about fitness cream? How many of you have heard about fitness cream? Okay, most people, many people. FitnessGram is an initiative with the Texas Education Agency where we are actually required to annually assess the physical fitness of our students. And FitnessGram is the measure that we use. We're required to do it for all students who are in PE. So it would be all students from kindergarten through seventh grade. And then if a student is in athletics in eighth grade or in PE in athletics in eighth grade, kids only have to have 2 years of PE in middle school. So some kids may not be in PE in eighth grade. We actually give FitnessGram to everybody in eighth grade because it's easier a lot of times. And then kids that are in high school PE or high school PE substitutions, that would include then athletics, marching band, cheerleading, drill team, all of those substitutions, they're supposed to have FitnessGram. When we turn it in as part of our teams, we have to turn it in. It's mandatory data that we have to submit. And so one of the reasons we're going to talk about FitnessGram today is to talk about what types of just different data you might want to see as a chef. And so FitnessGram, I'm going to show you a little bit about it, but so we're required to give FitnessGram. We're really only required to give it one time a year, at the end of the year when the data is due. We can always give it more than one time a year. We have a group of middle school teachers who already gave it this fall, and then they want to give it again in the spring, and they want to see how the kids have progressed. How can they do the mile faster? Can they do these other things? And I'm going to show you the three types of tests they give, and so then you can see what it's measuring on each student. Now, even though we only give it one time a year, if you think about our students in our system from kindergarten all the way through seventh grade, they've received it every single year. So we could actually pull data and look at, okay, this is where the kid was in first grade, where are they now in second grade, where are they now in third grade? Kind of like academic data, but physical fitness data. There are also parent reports. Have any of you received parent reports from FitnessGram? No, I think we have one school that passes out the parent reports, and so what I'll do for our next meeting, or actually what I can do as a follow-up for this meeting, is I can send you an email showing you some of the parent reports from FitnessGram. And so we're doing a lot of talk around FitnessGram. It's not good to just give an assessment because the state says to give it, but how can we use some of the data? These are some of the facts and figures from the FitnessGram, from the Cooper Institute, where it talks about, 48% of students don't attend weekly PE class, 24% of students who get 60 minutes daily physical activity, and 49% overweight teens with heart disease risk factors. Kids are only required to have 1 year of PE in high school, 1 year of PE in high school, 2 years in middle school, and then they are required to have PE every year in elementary school with a minimum number of minutes a week. The FitnessGram actually, I'm going to go to the FitnessGram site because what I did is I just took screenshots from the FitnessGram site. I'm going to show you right here. This shows you, a teacher gets into FitnessGram. I'll show you the different little tests in just a minute. They log in, and then this is how they record all of their data. So what all those little boxes are down there is those boxes are the different types of tests that they're choosing, the different assessments they're choosing that the kids are doing. So the PACER, and then see, it says administer the test. They have their class. They enter in their student data, and then they can run their data. So you see there's John Doe, and then they'll put in all of their information. We're extremely sensitive in regards to students' height and weight on how that is handled with each campus, and we're continuing to have more just discussion around it. Many of us, I think you probably remember the presidential physical fitness, whatever, yeah. That still actually exists, believe it or not. Some of those sub-tests are included in FitnessGram, but there are some other things that are just a little bit more doable. So there's three subsections to fitness grant. This is just showing the same thing over and over again, by the way. We're going to go down here. Aerobic capacity, muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility, and body composition. So each one of these videos are about 2 minutes long, so I thought we could watch each one so that you could see this is what our students in our district are doing as far as being assessed for physical fitness.
Take it.
Oh, I forgot. For me to have it big for you, I got to put.
Take a deep breath. Deeper. Good. It's time for Fit Talks with the Cooper Institute. Today's topic is aerobic capacity. No matter your age, physical activity is the key to living a longer, healthier life. Exercise strengthens our heart and lungs, which improves our cardiorespiratory fitness, also known as aerobic capacity. So what is aerobic capacity? The more oxygen, the better, basically. Aerobic capacity is the body's ability to take in, transport, and convert oxygen for energy during exercise. When you breathe in oxygen, it enters your bloodstream and travels throughout your body to your muscles and tissues. Therefore, the more oxygen your blood can deliver, the more energy you have in your muscles for physical activity that strengthen your heart and lungs and increase your aerobic capacity. So how do we measure it? The best way to measure aerobic capacity is with a VO2 max test, which measures the maximum amount of oxygen your body can deliver to your muscles during a unit of time. FitnessGram by the Cooper Institute uses the Progressive Aerobic Cardiovascular Endurance Run, or PACER test, to estimate VO2 max. This gives us a realistic view of how healthy and fit we actually are. So how can I improve my aerobic capacity? Activities like running, bike riding, swimming, or fast walking are all great examples of aerobic activities which use large muscle groups and lots of oxygen continuously over time. Believe it or not, short burst activities such as weightlifting, sprinting, and jumping are actually considered anaerobic because they don't require lots of oxygen and rely on energy already available in your muscles. The best advice is to find the aerobic exercises that you enjoy the most so you can have more fun while getting and staying healthy. To learn more about how to improve your fitness, visit fitnessgram.net and follow the Cooper Institute on social media.
That's aerobic capacity. The PACER test, 1 mile run or 1 mile walk. We use the PACER test most out of anything. There's a short video. By the way, all of the resources for FitnessGram are free for our staff. It only costs, like right now, I'm going to purchase some paper manuals. Honestly, it's cheaper to purchase the paper manuals than to rent them off a copier, so I might as well just purchase the pretty colored paper manuals they have. The system that we enter all of our data in is also free. It's interesting because it was free for a number of years, and then TEA was like, we're not going to pay for it. Now y'all have to pay for it. We had to pay for it, I think, for 2 years. And now it's back to being free again. And so, and then we're able to pull all kinds of things. So aerobic capacity is the first sub-test on there. I'll show you the next one. Next one is muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility. All of these tests, by the way, can be done without us having to purchase extensive amounts of equipment, too.
Hello, and welcome to Fit Talks with the Cooper Institute. Today's topic is muscular fitness. Now, you might not know this, but you have over 600 muscles in your body, all of which need to be healthy in order to move. Muscular strength, muscular endurance, and flexibility are all measurements of a healthy musculoskeletal system. And you don't have to be an athlete or a dancer to have strong, flexible muscles. Strength, endurance, and flexibility are all important indicators of how healthy your muscles are. So what are muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility? Let's start with strength. Strength is the maximum force your muscles can exert in a single effort, such as lifting a heavy weight. Endurance is the ability to sustain or repeat that activity over an extended amount of time. So while the ability to lift a heavy weight can measure strength, endurance is measured by how many times you keep doing it and for how long. Flexibility is the range of motion of muscles at the joint, demonstrated by stretching your arms over your head, bending over, or doing the splits. And why is musculoskeletal fitness important again? It's because a healthy muscular system prevents injuries while doing everyday activities, strengthening your bones, improving muscle mass, and reducing other health risk factors, such as heart disease. Most importantly, having healthy muscles means you can do more physical activity to improve your aerobic capacity and overall health. So how do we measure muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility? FitnessGram by the Cooper Institute uses different movements to test musculoskeletal fitness, such as push-ups, curl-ups, pull-ups, and the sit and reach. We then combine these to assess how well the musculoskeletal system functions. So how can I improve my musculoskeletal fitness? Most people can improve by doing strengthening and stretching activities, like using your body weight as resistance to do push-ups, curl-ups, and jumping activities on your own. Stretching or yoga can help improve flexibility. Young people need at least 60 minutes every day of moderate to vigorous physical activity for strong muscles and good overall health. The best advice is to find activities you enjoy and get busy improving your muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility for now and for the future. To learn more about how to improve your fitness, visit fitnessgram.net and follow the Cooper Institute on social media.
That's the second battery of assessments. And then the last one, body composition.
Hello, and welcome to Fit Talks with the Cooper Institute. Today, we're going to talk about body composition. Bodies come in all shapes and sizes, whether you're tall, short, thick, thin, curvy or straight, there's a healthy body composition range for everyone. So what exactly is body composition? Body composition measures how much of your body is fat versus how much is muscle, bones, and water. Everyone needs some body fat to be healthy, but too much can lead to serious health problems. On the flip side, too little body fat is also dangerous and can be a sign of malnutrition or an eating disorder. Understanding your body composition is an important step to understanding your overall health. So how do you measure it, and why? FitnessGram by the Cooper Institute measures body composition by estimating what percentage of the body is fat. Body Mass Index, or BMI, does not measure fat directly, but it does factor in your height-to-weight ratio, age, and sex to determine whether you are in a healthy range or zone. Overweight youth are at a higher risk for becoming overweight adults. Maintaining a healthy weight now can reduce the risk of future health problems such as heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and even cancer. However, too little body fat can weaken your immune system, cause heart and hormone problems, make bones more brittle, and even affect your brain. Remember, some fat is necessary for good health. So how can I improve my body composition? Most people can improve their body composition and reduce their risk of future health problems with physical activity and eating right. Young people need at least 60 minutes every day of moderate physical activity, but you can't out-exercise a bad diet. Eating healthy foods like fresh fruits and vegetables, lean proteins, and avoiding too much processed foods is also very important. Maintaining a healthy body composition with regular physical activity and good nutrition will help you perform your best in school and in extracurricular activities now and well into the future. To learn more about how to improve your fitness, visit fitnessgram.net and follow the Cooper Institute on social media.
As we go through the FitnessGram assessment, then students, they're placed in zones, is what happens on the back end. And so what the program does is it looks at the combination of all three of these things and it places the students in one of three fitness zones. There's the healthy fitness zone, the needs improvement, and then the health risk fitness zone. And so this information that is provided in your student reports that explain to the healthy fitness zone. What are some easier things that they could do first to be able to get more healthy based on, like I said, though, the results of the three assessments, so all three that are put in there. And so there, the student reports, there's the student report that's provided for the teacher, but there's actually a parent report that can also be printed that's sent to parents. As you can imagine, the sending a letter home to parents that says your child is a health risk or needs improvement is, it can not always go very well, right? And so one of the reasons why we were bringing Fitness Gram to you to have some discussion about is I'm going to follow up with an email that's going to show you some of the samples of our student reports. I'll have student names redacted, but and some samples of the parent report. And for us to talk about at our next SHAC meeting coming up, because one thing that came up with elementary PE teachers, this is valuable information that we have about people's children's health and physical fitness that we really want to share. And Mr. Coach Lehman at Marble Falls Elementary, he sends home the parent reports, I think, on the most regular basis out of anyone. But it can become very tricky in how we share that information. Or how do you think, like, should we have some parent information? What parent information should we have as we share these reports? Or are the reports you really think we should be sending them home to parents? And then also for you just to reflect on what would be some other types of data that you might want to see, knowing that we have the data from those three tests. In case you're curious, on the report it does have the student's BMI. We're sensitive when we collect all the student's weight to put on there. We're very sensitive in how we do that. The PE teachers do a wonderful job. I remember that when we did a rotation in my previous district with all the high school kids, we actually assess all the kids in the district three times a year with Fitness Gram. With the high school kids, we had a rotation, and it was there was not an adult writing down their height and weight. There really was buy-in from the majority of the students, and so they did the adult helped with their height, but the students did their weight themselves, and they wrote it on their little card, and then at the end they turned in their card because they went to all the different stations to do the different types of assessments. But for us to, I'll send you these different reports and these different things, and then for us to just have a discussion on, you know, in what ways does this committee want to look at that data to inform maybe some different types of programming that we might want to look at or to ask additional questions, but then also how do we want to share this information with parents? Do you find the parent report to be offensive? Do you find the parent report to be pretty good? What would be the components of a cover letter that you think would be important for parents? If you're sending the parent report home in the kid's backpack and the kid is looking at something and it's saying, you know, you're an extreme help, right? Keeping that in mind, a fourth grader reading that their thing says health risk, how a student may take that. So I'm gonna send you that information for us to really talk about at the next meeting, because you know, this is an assessment that, yes, we have to give and we have to turn in the data to the state, but it also could be very beneficial to us as a SHAC and also to families in receiving the information. What questions do you all have? Kelly?
So in the third section for body composition, is that just height and weight?
No. Height, weight, I have to look at that.
I think you said sex and age.
Yeah, it takes all of those factors and puts it into a formula that then shoots out BMI.
Okay.
The main part of that section is shooting out the BMI.
Right. I remember that when I used to have to do the acanthosis screening.
Yes.
We would put in their height and weight, and that letter would generate, and it would say, your child is in one of these areas, and it would say, like, obesity. And I hated that, but I was so pleased when those letters would come back, and the parents would actually take the kid to the doctor and get on a program, and, like, one of them lost a ton of weight. So I feel like those letters do need to go out, but it's wording can be so tricky, I think.
So body fat percentage and body mass index, so BMI and then body fat percentage is what it's reporting back when we're putting those in.
I have a question on that, because I've had friends who have very high BMIs, but they were, you know, really like 6% body fat because they were bodybuilders or power lifters or something. So can you fail one but get so high on the other two that you're still in the healthy zone? Like, how does it
compare all three? From what I see, it balances all. Okay. Because keep in mind also, you're talking about putting all this information in on a 7-year-old versus a 16-year-old, right?
Right.
So it configures differently. I don't know, how many of you have heard about the Cooper Institute before today? The Cooper Institute's one of the leading health groups. And so it makes those different types of adjustments, because if somebody is within there, most likely the assessments in the other two areas are going to it's a whole picture of them. And so that fitness zone is not just based on one area. That fitness zone is based on a compilation of all of the areas. You can actually do a thing with the Cooper Institute where you can sign up to do like a, I don't know how else to say it except for inpatient, like be an inpatient person where like they're coaching you on your fitness, and you can go live there for, you know, a week or whatever, and they coach you on your fitness, and they work with you on all kinds of things. But so I'll send y'all those different reports, and we can look at and talk about it. Kelly, I think that's an excellent example of, yeah, you're so thankful then when it comes back. The elementary PE coaches, what I'll do also is I'll get at least one of them. All four of them have given, we have two that are really, really experienced, that have given fitness cram for a long time on the elementary level, that can really articulate how they talk with kids. And then we have a middle school coach who's given it twice a year for several years, and he has some other experience too, and just how he talks to kids about it. Because, you know, if you remember, the presidential physics, I could never do the rope thing. I just don't have I never had the, and then the, like, hold yourself up with that. And you kind of feel like a failure, right? Like, I couldn't even climb a rope. I couldn't even get a foot up the rope. I couldn't do anything on the rope. And you just don't feel so great about yourself. And so, you know, these assessments aren't made to make the kids feel that way. Really, the goal is, you know, you're looking at how you individually, where you're at individually. And I know, for instance, like with Coach Lehman, he'll talk about where a kid was last year and where the kid is this year. And he'll talk to the kiddo about that. So we'll look at that a little more next time, and I'll have some of those teachers here, and they can talk about how they talk to kids, and then see how we can just, how can we really use the information. I've not talked to them about if they really are interested in doing it more than one time a year, if that's something y'all are interested in talking to them about. You know, they're building endurance all year long in their PE class. They do have to show some of the short videos to remind kids how to do the pacer test or how to do some of the other things. They have to show them little short videos, and then the kids, you know, they complete it, and they have little like cards or a little sheet where they're recording all of their stuff individually. It looked to me like almost every PE teacher has where the kids really recording it individually, and then they're turning it in. And so I'll have them come next time. What other questions do you have about it? Yes.
I guess for me, one of the most interesting things would be what happens to the children when they're no longer in PE.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, in my era, you were either an emphasis or to you in PE for duration. So, I mean, I'm sure there are factors that I'm unaware of, but I was really shocked. Kids don't have to be some sort of physical.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be curious to know, you know, it seems like, did you say they try and get it out of the way the first 2 years?
Oh, yeah. Freshman year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they get it out of the way, and then what happens for the next, you know, to them in terms of their fitness?
Well, then you go to college, and you about feel like you're going to fall over when you're first, you know, in your first PE class for 4 years. No. No, you're right.
I mean, I just see three years of physical decline for kids that are not playing sports.
And in my previous system, my a superintendent I had at one time when we were giving the fitness grant the 3 times a year and everything, he had been to the Cooper Institute, done lots of things at the Cooper Institute. We actually gave it to all students, so all the way through 12th grade. You know, it's interesting to be able to look at the data. One of the things that we had done at a certain point was, we were looking at the high school students, and we actually talked about creating and we were looking at middle school data in depth, and we were talking about then creating specialized PE classes that kids could sign up for to really improve, but not have it where they're feeling like it's a shaming class. So there's that fine balance right there, right? Somebody who really wants to get physically fit, that environment for those students. And, you know, there are things that, you know, we do, I think, an excellent job with our elementary PE teachers on helping the kids learn about nutrition, for instance. Learn about nutrition, but we can't control what a parent purchases or has in their house nutritionally. Right? We can help educate the student, but then, you know, sometimes some of the cheapest food is the unhealthiest food. We can help them make great choices, and we have great food here. And it's wonderful, we feed all students, and so they are able to make great choices at school with their food. There are some parts we can control, but then what is it that we can help students while we have them at school? And what is that, part of why the discussion with Shaq, there's that fine line, like we talked about with sex education, what is parent responsibility and what is school responsibility? You know, so right now we have this data, so do we want to be more aggressive in how we share it with parents? Do we not want to share with parents? Like, you know, we're not trying to force everybody to a certain lifestyle or to certain choices. There's that fine balance. That's really where our discussion goes next week, is looking at the types of things and where do we feel we are as a system? What do we have the data to be able to provide to parents, but then what else do we want to look at? Or how do we want to provide, if we want to, as a Shaq, how do we want to provide some opportunities for learning or for other things, just around fitness and around these areas of fitness. So. Other comments, questions? Okay. So I just kind of gave you the basic overview of the fitness plan. One of the other things that I had down is our wellness policy. But before we talk about, we're not talking about our wellness policy today, we'll get to it next time. One of the other things that I was going to ask you is for you to brainstorm and think about what are, when you think about that, we're the School Health Advisory Council, we are, we actually are over and can look at a great variety of things. This is, you know, physical fitness, that's one small part. And as you know, we've looked at a bunch of different parts. And so when we're talking and we're thinking and we're looking about how we might want to just look and dig more deeply into things in the future, I thought we could share out a little bit, and I'll follow up with a survey. What's some different types of data that you want to look at as a Shaq? So what is some data you want to look at as a Shaq? And then I'll look at, you know, do we have that kind of data? Do we not have it? Some of you may not even have been aware that we have this data. We have this data the School Health Advisory Council is the perfect place to look at this data. So I'm gonna give you some reports, but then I'll bring us actually previous year's data when we meet in February. What is some other data that you are interested in seeing that relates to Shaq?
Your Honor, is there any hope that we'll get to entertain the YRBS yet this year?
So the YRBS, so what I can do is, I think probably, not this year, but I think we have some knowledge building around YRBS.
Good.
So I think that's something that I can bring next time and we can really talk about. So the YRBS is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. I think I brought it up about 2 years ago. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey, national survey. We could actually partner with one of the universities to help us get back our results. One of the things with the YRBS is you ask it, you're going to get that data. Like, what you're asking, you're finding out. So really just knowing that we're asking these questions, and are we prepared for the answers that we will get, if that makes sense. Everything from seatbelt wearing to drug use to nutrition, to how much somebody might work out, to sexual activity, vast variety of information that is gathered through the YRBS. So I'll bring some information about YRBS for us to talk about further. I'll also talk to Dr. Gasway. I don't believe I've talked to him about YRBS. I talked to Dr. Allen in the past about it. I know on the tobacco survey that we were given the opportunity to possibly give. You know, remember I brought that to y'all, but it was like we weren't gonna get the results, and like give this for the benefit of the state, but then we don't get the results. know, I think YRBS, and there's a couple other instruments. Those are things that if we chose to give those inventories of those instruments, that we do get the results and we can look at as a shack on how we might want to, how we might want to improve the health of our community. And so YRBS is one of those. When I've done YRBS in the past, I've partnered with the university so that we had a, it's confidential, but we had a little part in there where if there was, because there are, if there was an indication of self-harm or something like that, then I was able to keep it where it was still blind, but the university was able to alert me. And so there's just, it's a pretty lengthy survey. I'll bring it for y'all to see. Not saying that's something we have to do, but just something for us to look at that could be an option. Other questions of data?
So those statistics you showed about 49% of
national.
Kids being, okay, that's national. So when we run these tests, do we know where we rank?
We could know where we rank, yes. We
against
could know
those
we rank
statistics.
Around those statistics.
And
yes.
It'd be neat to know where we rank as a district and then where each campus ranks.
Let me see how we, I mean, we can definitely compare across our district and then let me find
and
out.
I don't want to drive off any employees or teachers or anything, but have like the PE teachers done the fitness grant?
I don't know. I know that, so, you know, it's funny, marching band counts as a PE. Marching band counts as a PE. And so it's funny because Tony actually runs the mile with the kids. And so when he first got here 5 years ago, he was like, well, let's go. And the other band director was like, what's that? What? He's like, we're running the mile. Let's go. You know, running the mile with the kids. The kids are getting PE credit. We're going to run the mile with them. A lot of them do many. They have to demonstrate. They have to, And we can get them to show some of the things. And it is quite fascinating. You know, or how are we tracking? Other questions? Yes?
Anything on, with the drug and nicotine testing,
mm-hmm.
if that's resulting in less use, less catching of use, or less kids participating, or just, you know, what real outcomes happen from that?
Are we testing as much as we were last year?
We have a set schedule for how we test, so I think we're consistent in how we test, if that makes sense. So there's a set system that we have in place for how we test.
And nothing have the things that we're testing for changed? Like, I guess I feel like I haven't heard about it from my own kids lately. Like, they're just not talking about it as much. So I just didn't know if anything
mm-hmm.
had changed.
I think that's something we could give an update on. And Mr. Whittle or Mr. Huber could come and talk about that a little bit.
Yarna, didn't we just change the language on how things are treated depending on what you test positive for?
We did.
Okay.
We changed some, yeah. And I think that would also be... You know, one thing I told you at the start of this year that we had no control over that we could provide you some data on is vapes. So the legislature made the decision for us that if a student is caught with a vape, they go to the DAP. Automatic to the DAP, except for if the DAP is full, and then you can put them on the campus until a spot opens at the DAP, and then you're to send them to the DAP. It's quite fascinating. Clark, as you know, there's been a number of students that have been sent to the DAP for vapes. It's not even that you're testing the vape or what's inside the vape. It's that they are in possession of a vape. And so we could provide you some of the data on number of students for that. That's really caused a lot of disruption within some systems. The other side of the vapes is, you know, we also, as school systems, we're having toilets clogged and all kinds of things happening. Bathrooms where lots of vaping going on, or just trying to get control of the vaping situation had been difficult. This year, you know, we thought the legislature was going to go one way, more with parental rights and kids shouldn't be punished for vapes, and then they ended up going with the maximum kid gets caught with a vape there in the DAP. It was fascinating to watch how it progressed all summer. We thought they were going to go one way and they went the other way. We can provide you an update on that. And then we did the first round of Catch My Breath lessons in the fall, and actually we could talk to the PE teachers about that when the elementary PE teachers handled Catch My Breath lessons in the fall. We can talk to them a little bit about that. They Thought it was phenomenal. They had parents asking them questions about the Catch My Breath lessons. So I think it's, we hadn't really done a really good debrief on that. So we'll put down for them to come in and do a debrief. Yes, sir.
So when someone is caught with a vape at school or whatever, what type of interaction do, like, what type of follow-up do y'all do with the parents? When, like, do they just let them know, hey, they're caught with this, or do they, like, sit down with them and try to, you know, try to...
We have a meeting and a discussion around, yeah, so when, you know, there's, of course, like, there's the investigation side, and then there's the parent conference, and so the parents come in a meeting. Then there's the meeting to decide that they have to go to the DAP, and it's a mandatory placement. So we have some things that's called discretionary by the state. It makes a local decision whether or not they go to the DAP. And then there are things that are mandatory that we have no choice. We have a choice in how long they go for the majority of those things. There are some things we don't have a choice in how long they go. It's like, they bring a gun to school, that's a whole different, like, thing, right? But there are other things where we have a choice. And then, after we've met and had discussions and talked and everything, they started the DAP, and Mr. Fields is our principal at the DAP, and so he has a meeting with them and his counselor as they come over to the DAP. And then his staff follows up very closely with the student and with the parent. I don't know if you have anything to add there.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's exactly what we do. I will say this, it's been manageable this year, to be honest. It really has. I don't know what's changed at the middle school and high school campuses, but when the news came out, as Ms. Love had said, in August, July, actually, I think it was June when they released that, panic, I think, was what was happening. And it's been manageable. I mean, it truly has. I commend the campuses, is what I guess. The high school and middle school, what they're doing. We've had some, of course.
No, because I've heard, you know, there's been places that sell to underage kids in town.
There are.
And, you know, some parents may not even have a clue what their child's doing because, you know, they're not even having to get somebody to get it for them. They go get it themselves.
And we have some parents who buy it for their children.
Right.
Because they're like, well, I bought them the cotton candy flavor. I didn't buy them nicotine. I didn't buy them drugs. I bought them the cotton candy flavor. What harm is that, though? But actually, it's burning out their lungs. And before they're even 18 years old, they're going to be in an emergency room and all kinds of things. And so they think, like, because it's not a drug, like what they would think of as a drug, it's not harming them, when really it's just burning
it's
out
worse.
Their lungs even, yeah. And so I think one thing that we've done a really good job on, Clark, to be honest, coming into this year, is we like hammered telling kids at the start of the year.
Right.
And you hate to have it where, like, it sounds like a threat, but really, like, no choice. Like, the state says you're going to go to Epic if you have a vape at school. Like, we just hammered the information out to the kids. So last year, it's like, if you have a vape, what really happens to you, right? I mean, we have consequences, but they didn't really take us seriously. Starting this year, I mean, just, we started shooting out information. They had meetings, they had parent meetings, all the way down to elementary. We have kids that in the past had brought out vapes in elementary, and so, but most prevalent in high school, just hammering out that information, making sure the kids know the consequence. Like, a consequence that we have no control over. We only have control over the number of days. We have no control over that they have to go to Epic. And so I think that helped tremendously. I think both the middle school and high school principal did a really good job in just keeping on getting that information out.
If I remember, the police department came around, mm-hmm. like, during when all the summer stuff banned and everything, and talked to every single group.
Yeah.
And I think that's super effective.
Helped too. Yeah.
Is there help or treatment offered if needed once we're at that point where we are ready?
Yes, we partner with Blue Line Trails. So two ways that we partner. We partner with the Phoenix Center on the counseling side, right? And if you don't know, the Phoenix Center now has a walk-in clinic, in case you were wondering. So they have a phenomenal new facility and they have a walk-in clinic. We partner with Blue Bonnet Trails as our mental health employer. Not only that, we have a social emotional counselor at the high school and the middle school. I always call them the crisis counselors. They're both LPCs. Our high school one's also a school counselor, and so they also will help a student. But there are cases, for instance, several years ago, and Clark has actually worked with this young man too, but when I first came here, I was the principal over there, and he vaped so much that getting him through, That is a Blue Bonnet Trails. That's an addiction, trying to get them into the program for Blue Bonnet Trails when they're seeing Blue Bonnet Trails on a regular basis. Blue Bonnet Trails also has them hooked up with how they might need prescribed medication or other things. It was nicotine on this kid, but he vaped so much. At one point, I added up 10 times a day, and then you're expected to sit at the DAP. He had snuck out of class so much between all the classes that he'd been withdrawal at Epic. We were in like medical crisis at Epic, and so that's an extreme. But yes, we evaluate, and there's referral for Blue Bonnet Trails for assistance, and then Epic has a variety of counseling services that come in to assist the students too. But even back at the campus, if a student tests positive for drugs, which we'll go back through and we'll talk to you all about, there is a mandatory education program they have to go through, and then there's also some other services that are offered to the family. Sometimes the family denies the services. A good majority of our families take us up on the services. So we'll put that down. I'll talk to Dr. Gasway and Mr. Little about coming in and providing an update on that. Mr. Fields might end up helping with that a little bit. So. What other questions do y'all have? Okay, what I'm going to do next time is I'm going to get the nurses to think about all the different other types of data. Somebody had once mentioned to me they were curious how many of our kids failed a vision screening, or how many, where are we at on, what do we do in certain, where are we at in certain other areas. And so what we'll do is we'll provide you just some other data around that. Sometimes people aren't aware of all the different types of screenings we're legally required to have on kids, which is what Kelly referred to. It's the nurses really, really try to get the parent to follow up with a doctor, and you're just so thankful when they do, because you can't force them to take their child to the doctor when they have failed the screening in school. And so that's we work for that. If you think of any piece of data that you'd like to look at, if you'll let me know, I'll go through and I'll pull this. I'll pull also like number of. Pulled it for a meeting, like one of our very first meetings, and then they never shared it with you because we didn't get to it. But I'll pull, like I had last year's data on number of vape offenses, so I can pull last year's data compared to this year's data so far to look at and see. So that's all that I had. I will talk about the wellness policy, but then I'll gather some of this data for you, and we'll talk about some different areas just to see in what work we want to do as a SHAC to inform our school community.